We're the New Orleans Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
Hola. Los organizadores del evento de hoy tienen la firme determinación de crear un espacio multilingüe y con esa finalidad contamos con interpretación disponible en español e inglés. Les pedimos a todos los participantes que hablen lentamente y en voz alta y clara en sus micrófonos para facilitar la interpretación. Al terminar este anuncio, activaremos la función de interpretación y si usted está usando la aplicación Zoom, podrá ver el icono de un mundo en la parte de abajo de su pantalla. Haga un clic en el icono del mundo para escuchar la interpretación y seleccione español. Si usted está usando la aplicación Zoom desde su teléfono, haga clic en los tres puntitos donde dice More, seleccione Language Interpretation y después Español. Si tiene algún problema al hacer esto, por favor, escriba un comentario en el chat. Gracias. Hi, the organizers of today's event have made a strong commitment to creating a multilingual space. To that end, we have interpretation available in Spanish and English. We ask that all participants speak slowly, loudly, and clearly into their microphones to make the interpretation easier. Right after this announcement, we will activate the interpretation feature. And if you're using the Zoom application, you will see a globe icon at the bottom of your screen to listen to the interpretation. Click on the globe and select English. If you're using the Zoom on your phone, click on the three dots where it says More, choose language interpretation, and select English. If you have any problems doing this, please comment in the chat box. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. I'm Michael McKee. I'm the treasurer of the Tennis Political Action Committee. Tennis PAC works to elect pro-tenant candidates, and we advocate for pro-tenant legislation and policy. Welcome to everyone who's watching on Zoom, on Facebook, or who is listening on WBAI Radio 99.5 on the FM dial, or watching on the WBAI website, WBAI.org. Welcome to all the candidates. We appreciate your joining us today. The three organizations sponsoring this forum represent tens of thousands of New York City tenants, and we are all part of the statewide tenant movement, which is resurgent and has won terrific victories in the last couple of years. The New York City real estate lobby has enormous power. Their power comes from their money. And their money comes from the rents that we pay them, and we should never forget that. For too long, the landlords have had their way with compliant government officials. Those days are over. The reason we organize this event is twofold. First, we want tenants to meet the nine leading Democratic candidates for mayor and hear what they have to say about our issues. One of these candidates is likely to be the next mayor of New York City. Second, we want the candidates to understand that tenants are an important voting bloc, and we want our issues to be part of the discussion and the debate over who gets elected mayor. As of last night, there were almost 900 people registered for this event over Zoom. Others are watching on Facebook or listening on WBAI or watching on the WBAI website. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my friend and colleague, Yolan Kador, Executive Director of the Tenants and Neighbors Coalition.
Thank you very much, Michael, and good morning, everyone. My name is Yolan Kador. I am the Executive Director of Tenants and Neighbors. We are a statewide organization working to build tenants' power to win safe, decent, and affordable housing in New York City. I and our hundreds of members will be watching and listening attentively today to hear your vision and plan for protecting and preserving affordable housing for New York City renters. What the global coronavirus pandemic revealed to us as tenants and voters is that the next mayor of New York City must be the person at this forum with the clearest and most compelling vision and plan for ending landlords' harassment, ending homelessness, and strengthening tenant protection in New York City. And that person is also able to outline in policy and practice their understanding of what is meant when we say housing is a human right. It is now my pleasure to introduce my colleague, Ava Farkas, the Executive Director of MET Council Action.
Good morning. I'm Ava Farkas, the Executive Director of MET Council Action. We are the city's oldest tenant union, and we believe that housing is for people, not profit. As Yolande mentioned, the COVID-19 pandemic has only served to highlight the existing inequity in our city and the critical tie between housing and healthcare. Because the rent was too high before the pandemic, today over 1 million people have fallen behind and are unable to pay. 79,000 New Yorkers are sleeping in shelters or on the streets. Public housing is systemically underfunded and in disrepair. Gentrification is pushing out long-term tenants of color, and the rents for new so-called affordable apartments are out of reach for regular New Yorkers. Today, the 9 front-runner candidates will be asked by our members to take a stance on these critical issues. We are looking to see which candidates will boldly and unapologetically side with renters and unhoused New Yorkers over the interests of landlords and real estate developers. We invite everyone watching or listening to join the conversation today on Twitter using the hashtag #TenantsVote and tagging any of our 3 organizations. You can find us at Met_Council, Tenant Inquilino, Tenant Neighbor, and Tenants Pack NY on Twitter. It's now my pleasure to introduce our moderator. Rachel Holiday Smith is a reporter at The City, the nonprofit and independent news website that covers New York, where she is the Manhattan Beat reporter and often writes stories about housing and development. She has covered local news in New York for a decade, previously working at New York One, DNA Info, and WNYC. You can follow her at Twitter at Rachel Holiday. Thank you.
Thank you, Ava. Good morning to everyone. Welcome.
Morning.
Good morning. So, quick plug for the news website that I work for, The City. We're reader supported, and we publish at thecity.nyc. So for those who don't know, please check us out. So let's go over how this forum will work. We're hoping to get through a lot of questions today about housing issues and tenant issues. So we've got 3 tenants who will help us do that today, and they will be asking some of the questions. In 3 lightning rounds at the beginning, middle, and end of the forum, we'll hear from them, and they will ask a series of yes or no questions to the candidates. One of our tenants, Candida, is going to be speaking in Spanish when she asks her questions. So it's important for everyone to enable that translation, that interpretation, rather, feature. So I'm going to repeat how to do that. So for English speakers, and this includes the candidates, please look at the bottom of your Zoom screen and see the globe icon and choose English, and of course choose Spanish as well if you haven't done that as well already. Okay. Also, for interpretation feature, we have to speak slowly. I'm reminding myself as much as anyone else, so please just slow your words down, speak slowly so that everyone can get the information that they need. That feature is only available through Zoom, unfortunately, not through the phone or on our Facebook stream. Okay. So in between the lightning rounds, I'm going to be asking longer in-depth questions from each of the candidates, and that will be timed. So you should be able to see Abby Eng, who is on the screen. She is our timekeeper, and she's going to keep us on track so we get through everything we need to get through. So thank you, Abby. I also need to make an announcement to the candidates that we do have someone on the mute button. So we will be muting you if you go over time, because again, we've got a lot to get through. I'd also like to thank Andrea Shapiro and Esteban Guerrón for their technical help. They're our behind-the-scenes folks, so thank you both very much. One housekeeping point before we begin. 3 of these candidates, Maya Wiley, Ray McGuire, and Scott Stringer, must leave the forum halfway through. So because of that, we will give them an opportunity to respond in writing to all of the questions after the event, and we will be sharing those with the folks who signed up for the forum after on email. So let's meet our candidates. We have 9 in total with us today. Candidates, I'm going to introduce you, and you will be muted here, but please just wave or raise your hand, let people know who you are as I introduce you, okay? So in alphabetical order, we have Eric Adams, the current Brooklyn Borough President and former Brooklyn State Senator in Crown Heights and a former police captain. Welcome to you. We have Sean Donovan, who served as the commissioner of the city's housing department under Mayor Michael Bloomberg and as HUD secretary and budget director for President Barack Obama. We have Catherine Garcia with us, who most recently served as the City Hall's food czar during the beginning of the pandemic, but before that she served as the commissioner of the Department of Sanitation and the interim head of the Public Housing Authority. Welcome. And please welcome Ray McGuire, a longtime executive in the banking world who served as the head of global corporate and investment banking at Citigroup. Welcome to you. Next up, we have Carlos Menchaca. And actually, I need to scroll over on my Zoom screen because we have so many people. I can't see everyone at once. Okay. Carlos has served as the council member representing Sunset Park, Brooklyn, and all of District 38 since 2014. We have Diane Morales with us. She is a longtime leader and founder of social services nonprofits, most recently leading Phipps Neighborhoods in the Bronx. Again, I've got to scroll over on my screen. Hold on just a moment. Oh, there she is. Hi, Diane. All right. And we have Scott Stringer, who is currently the city's comptroller and previously served as Manhattan Borough President and State Assembly Member on the Upper West Side. Welcome to you. Joining us also is Maya Wiley. She is a civil rights activist and attorney, a professor, an MSNBC contributor, who served as counsel to Mayor de Blasio and as chair of the Civilian Complaint Review Board. Hello. And lastly, we have Andrew Yang, who is a technology entrepreneur who you may know as one of the 2020 Democratic presidential candidates who advocated for the concept of universal basic income. Welcome. Okay, so let's get started. And at this point, I'm just going to remind the candidates to please unmute yourself when we begin. So now we will hear from Aniqua Lewis of Tenants and Neighbors, who will lead us through the first set of lightning round questions. And a note for the candidates, I'm going to follow up for answers so you know who's going to answer when. So just be on the lookout for that. I'll say your name and then you can answer. So
excuse me, Rachel, just a point of clarity. The non-lightning round questions, how long is it? Is it a minute, 90 seconds? I just want clarity because I have my stopwatch.
Sure. It's 2 minutes. Okay. It's 2 minutes and they may be split up, you know, 1 minute on one part of it and 1 minute on another, but it will be 2 minutes total.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll remind. Sure. And I'll remind you guys when we begin with that.
Thank you.
So, Aniqua, if you'll come on and start the lightning round questions. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Aniqua Lewis.
Good morning.
Good morning. I am a resident on Roosevelt Island in a Section 8 based project apartment. And I'm also a member of Tenants and Neighbors. This morning, I'll start you out with the lightning round questions. The first question for today will be, are you a tenant?
So we're going to begin with Eric Adams. Are you a tenant?
I own a four-story, four-family apartment. I own my building, and my tenants never had their rents increase in over 12 years.
Okay, so not a tenant. But you've got your own building. Okay, we're going to move on to Sean Donovan. Are you a tenant?
I'm not.
Okay. Catherine Garcia?
No.
Okay. Ray McGuire?
No.
Carlos Menchaca?
Proudly, yes.
Okay. Diane Morales, are you a tenant?
No.
Scott Stringer?
Yes, I'm a rental two-bedroom apartment, two kids, wife.
Okay. Thank you. Maya Wiley, are you a tenant?
No.
Okay. And Andrew Yang, are you a tenant?
I am one of the two-thirds of New York City residents that is renting.
Okay. That's a yes. All right.
Yeah, and that's a yes.
Why don't we go to the second question?
Okay. Question two. Are you refusing donations from landlords and developers in this race?
Okay, I'll remind everyone that this is a yes or no. So we're going to go start with Eric Adams.
No.
Okay. Sean Donovan?
I'm refusing donations from anyone on Jumaane Williams' bad landlord list.
Okay. Catherine Garcia?
No.
Okay. Ray McGuire?
No.
Great. Carlos Menchaca?
Yes, proudly.
Okay. Diane Morales?
Yes.
Okay. Scott Stringer, donations from landlords and developers?
I'm not taking big developer money and big landlords.
Okay. Maya Wiley?
No real estate developers, no large landlords.
Okay. And Andrew Yang?
I'm happy to say that we have over 12,000 donors to the campaign, including
yes
the lowest
no
average donor, but we are taking money from.
I think you said that you are not taking money from landlords and developers. Is that correct?
No. Well, we are taking money from any New Yorker who wants to help, but okay. We're a very grassroots-led campaign.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Aniqua, you can ask question three.
Okay. Question three. Do you support a rent rollback or rent decrease for rent-stabilized apartments?
Okay. We're going to start with Eric Adams once again. Do you support a rent rollback, yes or no?
No, I do not. I believe we need to stabilize the rents for owners and renters.
Okay, that's a no. Okay, we're going to go to Sean Donovan. Rollback.
I believe in an eviction moratorium and rental assistance that will help those residents pay their rent.
Okay, so not a rollback, but we will get to that issue, but not a rollback. Okay, so we're going to go to Catherine Garcia.
No, I don't believe in a rollback. We need to balance and make sure that landlords also can pay their
okay. Utilities. Thank you. We will get, I'm just going to bear in mind, we're going to get to more substantive questions on all of these, but we're just specifically talking about a rollback for this. So Ray McGuire, would you support a rent rollback?
No.
Okay.
I'm keeping to the rules of engagement now, so thank you. It's yes or no, I think.
Yes, it is. Okay. Carlos Menchaca, rent rollback, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Diane Morales.
Yes.
Okay. Scott Stringer.
I support cancel rent open to rollback in certain circumstances.
Okay. We're going to get to cancel rent, but it sounds like that's a no overall, but we will get more substantive on that question. Okay. Maya Wiley, yes or no on a rent rollback?
No.
Okay. And Andrew Yang, yes or no?
No.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much for the ones who just are answering yes or no. I really appreciate it. Aniqua, you can go ahead with number four.
Okay, question four. Do you think New York should cancel rent and mortgages in the wake of the COVID-19 crisis?
Thank you. So Eric Adams will begin with you.
Yes, rent and mortgages.
Okay. Sean Donovan?
As I said earlier, I support eviction moratorium and rental assistance to pay those rents.
Okay. So it sounds like that's a no on, you know, canceling rent and mortgages, but we will get into the more substantive stuff there. Okay. So Catherine Garcia, do you support canceling rent and mortgages? Yep. There you go. Could you repeat?
No.
Okay. Ray McGuire?
No.
Thank you. Carlos Menchaca?
Yes.
Diane Morales?
Yes.
Scott Stringer?
Yes.
Okay. Maya Wiley?
No.
Okay. Andrew Yang?
No.
Okay. Thank you all. Aniqua, question five.
Okay. Question five. Do you think the affordable housing lottery process is fair?
Okay. So currently as it stands, is the housing lottery process fair? Eric Adams?
No.
Okay. Sean Donovan?
No.
Okay. Catherine Garcia?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Ray McGuire?
No.
Great. Carlos Menchaca?
No.
Thank you. Diane Morales?
No.
Scott Stringer?
No.
Maya Wiley?
No.
Andrew Yang?
No.
Okay, unanimous. We got our first unanimous answer. Okay, thank you so much, Aniqua.
Thank you, everyone. Good luck.
Thanks,
Aniqua. Thank you.
Okay, so let's begin with our first longer answer question, and this will be split into two parts, a minute for each part, and we're going to start with a question about the Rent Guidelines Board. So the only power that the mayor of New York has over the rent stabilization system is to appoint 9 members of the Rent Guidelines Board. That's 2 tenants, 2 landlords, and 5 public members. So whether those public members who constitute the majority of the board are sympathetic to landlords or tenants has a huge impact on whether or not the board has voted to increase or keep rents the same for stabilized tenants. So we're going to begin with Andrew Yang for this question. We're going to go in reverse alphabetical just to switch it up a little bit. So the first question, and you've got a minute here, is do you support the concept of rent regulation as a policy? And can you explain why you do or do not?
Thank you for the question. First, I do want to give a shout out to the city, city.nyc. It is a phenomenal journalism resource. Nonprofit journalism is great. I do support the work of the Rent Guidelines Board and the government and the public sector's role in helping determine what people's rents are. I thought that their decision to freeze rents in 2020 was the right kind of move, the right sort of direction. The people I would appoint would take a very similar tack, particularly now since we are badly wounded. So many people are having trouble paying their rent. So many people can't find jobs. It's one reason why I'm also for an eviction moratorium, a right to counsel. We can't be making a crisis worse right now. So the public sector has to play a role. I would suggest, though, Rachel, that there are things the city can do that can help beyond the Rent Guidelines Board. We can see to it that some of the landlords that are abusing the system in terms of the rent stabilization rules are actually held accountable.
It's time. Okay, we're going to actually get to a question about holding landlords accountable. So hold that thought. I'm going to move on to Maya Wiley, again, reverse alphabetical here. So do you support the concept of rent regulation as a policy, and why or why not?
You know, rent regulation is critical. We have to have it. My earliest memories living in a black neighborhood where so many of my neighbors were working very long hours, struggling to make ends meet. And I lost my best friend and watched my whole neighborhood displaced when landlords increased their rents and they got pushed out. So the bottom line is rent regulation, yes. And we have to have an eviction moratorium. We have to create rent subsidies because housing is a human right. And that means we have to keep folks in their homes because homelessness is an eviction crisis and it's one we can prevent.
Thank you so much. Next, we will go to Scott Stringer. Same question. Do you support rent regulation as a policy?
I support rent stabilization as a policy, as a matter of law. When I was in the state assembly and the state legislature tried to weaken the rent laws, and they did that successfully, I was a lone voice to say no and voted no, both in 1993 and 1997. And I have a pro-tenant voting record in the assembly and have carried that with me for the rest of my life. I was a tenant organizer for Mitchell Amas. I stood guard over single room occupancy hotels with Goddard Riverside, literally spending the night in a van, because at the end of the day, rent stabilization and true affordable housing is the way people aspire in our city. And any attempt to weaken it must be met with resistance.
Okay, thank you so much. Next, we'll go to Diane Morales. Same question. Do you support rent regulation?
I do support rent regulation, and I think we actually need to move to go farther than that. I think we need to guarantee housing for all in New York City. I started off my career in graduate school as a tenant organizer for Banana Kelly in the South Bronx, and I have spent my entire career advocating for those who have struggled the most in our city. I think we need to move toward making sure that rents are affordable for everyone, and that includes advocating and pushing for freezes around rent-regulated apartments, and also looking into what other reforms in the city charter and outside the city charter we can make to permanently protect our residents and our tenants and guarantee housing for everyone.
Thank you so much. Next, we will go to Carlos Menchaca.
I do support rent regulation. The state and the city have been for a long time, and this is beginning to change, run by landlord money, developer money. I think we need to bring in campaign finance reform to ensure that that money gets out of politics. As someone who has been constantly attacked by the REBNY forces since I first ran in 2013, I can see that power. I think the Rent Regulation Board can be reformed. I think we need more pro-tenant structures that don't require immigrants and others to have to fight every single time there's going to be a vote so that we can actually freeze rents. And I think that part of what we need to do is repeal the Erdstadt law so we can bring more of that power back to the city to regulate
10 seconds.
To regulate further our ability to keep people in their homes at affordable rents. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We will be going to Ray McGuire next, but I just want to pause. We're getting a message from our interpreters that we are speaking too quickly. So I'm just going to re-remind us to slow down. And I'm reminding myself to slow down. Okay. So Ray McGuire, do you support the concept of rent regulation as a policy?
The answer is yes. I will speak slowly. I will also answer the rules of engagement when yes or no questions are asked. And so, listen, we have both a legal and a moral obligation. So unequivocally, yes, especially now, we need to keep homes affordable. Rent regulation is an important tool in the toolkit of which we're going to have to access all of them. We may need also to provide support for the small building business, the small building owners. We're also small businesses, which is part of my overall economic comeback plan, inclusive economic comeback plan. But we simply cannot have rising rents drive people out of their neighborhoods. We also may need to access supplementing the rent with rent subsidies. So yes, we do need to make certain that we have regulation, and we need to access all the tools that we have in the toolkit, especially in the midst of this crisis. But be mindful, this crisis existed before COVID.
Time.
To address.
Next time. Thank you. Okay, next we'll go to, I'm getting confused now. Hold on. Catherine Garcia. Rent regulation, do you support it?
Yes, I do support it. I think that rent regulation has allowed neighborhoods to be very stable and for people to raise their families. You know, my brother actually lives in a rent stabilized apartment, which has meant that he could stay in his community. And what we want to see in the ability to build community, because we know that housing heals. When you have stable long-term housing, you have access to education, you are able to hold a job more easily, rent regulation going forward.
Okay, thank you so much. Sean Donovan, do you believe in rent regulation as a policy?
Absolutely, and I believe more broadly that government has a central role to play in creating and preserving affordable housing. It's why, as a kid growing up in this city, I was outraged seeing homelessness on our streets. It's why I started volunteering in a homeless shelter and then came back to New York to work for a nonprofit creating and preserving affordable housing. And it's why I've entered public service to ensure that housing is central to people's lives. Let's be clear, housing is the single most expensive thing for any New Yorker. And if we can't make it affordable, people won't be able to eat, to afford healthcare, to get broadband that we see is so absolutely critical to our lives. And so not only do I adamantly support rent regulation, but also many, many other things government should be doing to keep housing affordable.
Thank you very much. Eric Adams, same question to you. Do you support rent regulation?
Yes, I do strongly. And not only do I support it for those who have large buildings, but I support it personally. As I indicated, my tenants have been in my building from anywhere from 10 to 15 years. When they moved in, they signed a lease that I stated I would never raise their rent. I think it's imperative when you look at that housing is such a significant amount of your income. We should do everything that's possible to help each other. There's so much for human need. There's just not a lot for human greed. And I live by that. And I know what it is to be on the verge of homelessness. As a child, we were on the verge of homelessness all the time. And we could expand the rent guideline board to ensure that economists are on the board as well to help deal with the changing economics of our city. But yes, I do support it.
Okay, thank you. And you just segued perfectly into the second part of this question, which is the makeup of the rent guidelines board. And this is a question that comes directly from the advocates who are co-hosting this event, who feel very strongly that the public members of that board should be in support of tenants rather than landlords. So this is a question from them. If you are elected mayor, And I should say that we are going to start with Andrew Yang on this one again. So just keep that in mind. If you are elected mayor, will you commit to appointing public members to the Rent Guidelines Board who understand their job is to keep rents affordable rather than protect profits from landlords? And this is 1 minute to Andrew Yang.
Yes, of course. I mean, that should be the point of the mayoral appointment process, that you appoint folks who are going to look out for, again, the two-thirds of New Yorkers who are tenants. That will be their job. That will be certainly my very clear directive. And you'll look forward to hopefully being able to meet with them regularly, to be able to tell them what's going on in your communities, because they'll be there to serve you. I mean, that's true of really the entire administration. So I'm excited about this process because I think we can do a lot of good.
Thank you very much. Okay, next we'll go to Maya Wiley. Will you appoint public members who support the concept of keeping rents affordable?
Absolutely. Look, I'm a civil rights lawyer and a racial justice advocate, and there has been never so many areas in which we've been discriminated against, and housing and rentals is a primary one. I was part of a team that ensured that Rachel Godsell was appointed to chair it in 2014, which was the first instance in which we had the lowest, because she was deeply committed as a civil rights attorney to making sure that what we were doing was preserving the rights of tenants and protecting housing. And that is what I will continue to do. And it's why I'm running for mayor.
Thank you so much. Okay, Scott Stringer, same question to you. Will you appoint public members who support tenants rather than landlords' profits, as our advocates say?
Look, this is it is necessary to appoint tenant advocates with a view towards how to deal with the politics on the Rent Guidelines Board. Look, I probably testified at the Rent Guidelines Board more than most people for many, many years, and you could see what's at play. You could see the data being manipulated on behalf of the landlords. You know, fuel costs are down. Different indicators are down, but the rent keeps going up. And I do give Bill de Blasio credit for leveling the playing field. And I do think we have to go further. We need to develop an expertise and goals so the Rent Guidelines Board doesn't become a joke. And what usually happens is tenants who are barely able to make it in the city come to the Guidelines Board, sit in the audience, and you just get a sense with a wink and a nod that the deal is done. As mayor, I'm going to appoint people with deep experience to advocate on behalf of tenants. That's how we level the playing field. And I have every intention to do that with data, with knowledge, and my own personal experience going to the Rent Guidelines Board.
Okay. Thank you very much. Diane Morales, you're next with the same question about the public members of the Rent Guidelines Board.
Yes. I mean, this feels kind of like a no-brainer to me. I'd take that a step further. I'm not going to commit to appointing folks who are going to advocate for tenants' rights. I'm actually going to partner with tenant advocates and the community to help identify who those folks should be. And, you know, the people in the community who have been doing this work, who are most greatly affected by the rents and the Rent Guidelines Board, should have a critical voice in determining who their representatives are. And so I make a commitment to partnering with community advocates and representatives to figure out who they want to be their representatives at that table.
Thank you very much. Carlos Menchaca, same question.
Thank you, and absolutely. The public representatives of a rent guideline board should be people who are impacted by the rent. And that's why I believe, and as someone who's a tenant, will be that leader to bring that tenant voice into the space. I'll also make sure that the landlords who are on this board are the landlords that represent the kind of landlords that we want in the city of New York, that can actually be sensitive to the tenant rights that often get pushed aside. And I think what's really important is that in the last 7 years as council member, my leadership style has been in co-governance, in true co-governance, in movement with renters and people who have been impacted by these guidelines, and many of them immigrants, people who are often pushed and evicted. So, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Ray McGuire, the same question. Will you appoint folks on the public members on the rent guidelines board that will protect affordability for tenants rather than profits for landlords? That's from our advocates.
The answer is yes, unequivocally. And let's frame this. Remember, more than 25% of the low-income tenants were rent burdened before the pandemic, and the problem is only exacerbated. So we need to make certain that the people who are living there, the whole point is to keep rents affordable for the working people. And I would go one step further and make certain that you had appropriate representation for those New Yorkers who currently live in rent-regulated apartments. So yes, unequivocally, yes, this is something that we need to make certain that we address with appropriate sense of urgency, because up to this point, we've talked about it, but done nothing about it. So that's how I think about it.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Catherine Garcia.
Absolutely. Yes, I believe that we need to ensure that there is advocacy so that rents remain affordable in the city of New York, and that we are really making sure we are following the data and not getting manipulated regarding what the numbers show. And so absolutely, I would be supportive of that.
Okay, thank you very much. Sean Donovan, you're next.
Absolutely, and I think it's critically important that you all not just listen to our words today, but look at our records on these issues. 25 years ago, I started working with resident leaders across this city. I was sent to 10-day training for community organizing and came back and started working to make sure that residents had a real voice in their communities, whether it was at East Brooklyn congregations or South Bronx churches, organizations like Nos Quedamos in the South Bronx. That's why when I was housing commissioner, I built those partnerships to build deeply affordable, healthy, sustainable housing like Via Verde in the South Bronx. It's why after I led the recovery effort under President Obama to rebuild from Sandy, I partnered in Rebuild by Design with tenant leaders like Damaris Reyes at Good Old Lower East Side and so many others around the city. This is something I've done over and over again and would absolutely prioritize in my appointments to the Rent Guidelines Board.
Thank you. Okay, lastly, we'll hear from Eric Adams on this question about the Rent Guidelines Board.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I agree. And I also, you know, I enjoyed what Sean Donovan stated. Look at the person action. I will continue to go back that I have a apartment where my tenants have not had a rent increase in over 10 to 15 years. I believe we should also place an economist on the board. And I think we need to really separate of the micro apartments from the major apartments. Black wealth is tied in their real estate. So if you have an 8-9 unit building, you are tied to your expenses. And we need to stop bringing all the apartments in the city together. Our wealth is in our real estate. And if we lose that real estate, we would displace tenants and you would see gentrification in the city.
Okay. Thank you all. So now we will move into another lightning round section. And we will hear from Esteban Garon, who is a tenant who helped organize this, actually. He's one of our great organizers, and he's going to join us for the next section of lightning round questions. Esteban, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Rachel. Good morning, everyone. Like Rachel said, my name is Esteban Garon. I'm here representing the Tenants PAC Board of Directors. I'm a rent-stabilized tenant in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, and I organize here with the Crown Heights Tenant Union and Brooklyn Eviction Defense. Tenants PAC was founded a little under 25 years ago to counter the losses the tenant movement suffered in the wake of the Great Rent Wars of 1997. It's no secret that we want it all back, and then some, proving that 525 folks here, proving what we've already seen today, which is that tenants vote.
I'm just going to remind you to slow down. That's a note from our interpreters. You're doing great, but just slow down.
No problem. Okay. That's 5.4 million New Yorkers, as Mr. Yang said. Fully two-thirds of your future constituents are tenants like me. So if you want to be the next mayor of our city, you will not win without us. And since I have your attention, I have some questions. Remember that these are yes or no questions. They're a little bit longer, but appreciate you sticking to that to that format. So first, tenants of all types routinely contend with landlords who do not maintain their properties. If elected, will you increase funding to boost code enforcement in all five boroughs?
Okay, so for this one, we're going to start with Sean Donovan and go in alphabetical order from there. So Sean Donovan, would you support boosting funds for code enforcement?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, so Catherine Garcia next.
Yes.
Okay. Ray McGuire.
Yes.
Carlos Menchaca.
Yes.
Diane Morales.
Yes.
Scott Stringer.
Yes.
Maya Wiley.
Absolutely.
Okay. Andrew Yang.
Heck yes.
Eric Adams.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Another unanimous one. Okay. So you can move on to the next question, Esteban. Thank you.
That was an easy one for you. Next one. Currently, there is only one citywide voucher program to provide people with a pathway out of shelters. And those who get City FEPS vouchers have a hard time finding housing. They do not cover apartments at the market rate. And many, including undocumented New Yorkers, are not eligible for the program. Also, folks are discriminated against all the time in these programs. If elected, will you work to pass Intro 146, which is a bill to increase CityFEP's value to reflect market rents in New York City?
Okay, so we're going to start with Sean Donovan once again. So this is specifically about Intro 146. Go ahead.
Yes.
Great. Catherine Garcia.
Yes.
Ray McGuire.
Yes, I just asked the question. I wonder how this group would do what Simon says.
Oh, Ray, you're taking up more time criticizing us. Let's just move on.
I just observed the criticism and observation.
My All right, let's, moderator, let's keep moving on. Carlos Menchaca, do you support Intro 146 about City FEPs?
Yes.
Okay. Diane Morales.
Yes.
Scott Stringer.
Absolutely, yes.
Maya Wiley.
Yep.
Andrew Yang.
Yes.
Okay. Eric Adams, last to you. This is about Intro 146.
Yep. Two thumbs up. Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I've got a lot of things on my screen. I can't always see everybody. Okay. Esteban, go ahead with the next question.
Right. Slightly longer one, but it is still yes or no answer. In 2017, the Right to Counsel Coalition organized and won the nation's first law guaranteeing legal representation to tenants in housing court. In the wake of the pandemic, we needed to go further because all evictions are violent. Intro 2050 guarantees immediate access to the program for those who will qualify in every zip code. And Intros 1104 and 1529 would raise the income limit to cover a majority of tenants, all types of eviction proceedings, and provide community groups with the funding they need to make the program truly universal. Will you now publicly call on the mayor and the city council to pass this legislation immediately and make its passage your first act as mayor if it is not passed by January of next year?
Okay. So we're going to start once again with Sean Donovan.
Sorry, can I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
Our first act as mayor, we obviously can't pass the bill alone. So I just want to make sure what you're asking our first act would be as mayor.
Yes. So, you know, we're hoping that this passes prior to that. But if it has not, or any of those three have not, we're saying you would go all in and make it happen as only a mayor can.
So to call for passage. So the answer is yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Catherine Garcia.
Yes.
Ray McGuire.
Yes.
Carlos Menchaca.
Yes.
Diane Morales.
Yes.
Scott Stringer?
Yes.
Maya Wiley?
Absolutely.
Andrew Yang?
Yes.
Eric Adams?
100% yes.
Okay. Thank you all. Thank you, Esteban. So we are going to move on to another longer question with 2 minutes each for the answer. And we're going to actually start with Maya Wiley, Ray McGuire, and Scott Stringer, because I know you all have to leave at noon. So Maya, you'll go first, then Ray, and then Scott.
Rachel, I'm having too much fun. I want to try to extend my time. So, you know, don't give me any favorite, you know, because I'm going to
Okay. Noted. All right. So This is about affordable housing and the production of affordable housing, which I'm sure that we could have an entire 2-hour forum about alone, but we'll try to do it in a couple of questions. So one of the things the mayor has control over is how the city spends money and uses it to uses its zoning authority to spur the development of affordable housing. So Mayor de Blasio has been criticized for rezoning primarily low-income neighborhoods for the creation of affordable housing that's created by private developers at, and I don't need to tell people on this Zoom right now, that it's usually at prices that many people cannot afford, especially people in the neighborhood where it's built. A lot of people say that, sarcastically, affordable housing, it's not affordable. So building more deeply affordable housing in the future will require a lot of public funding. And right now in the city, you know, even though we've got federal stimulus money, we're facing a budget crunch. So it's going to be tough to actually find that funding to create more affordable housing. So the first question, and again, this is going to Maya Wiley, and you have a minute. How do you define affordable housing? And I'd like you to talk about this by income. What would be the goal income range, a minimum and maximum, for households that are eligible for affordable housing moving forward?
So thank you for this. Look, housing is a human right. It requires us to have a housing first strategy that ensures we get folks who directly into housing and we prevent eviction. We actually have a plan. We're about to put out a housing plan. So on the numbers, we will give that to you when we put that plan out. But let me just say it includes deep affordability. And we have a $10 billion capital construction plan already. That's something I can do as mayor on day one. $10 billion creating 100,000 jobs. But capital construction means build things and fix things we need. So we have already, that's affordable housing. So we're going to create more funding for that. We are also earmarking $2 billion of that for renovation and rehabilitation of NYCHA units, because we've got 5,000 units sitting vacant right now.
Okay. Can I just follow? I know that you're coming out with your housing plan with specifics, but I just want to ask you generally, what do you feel is too high of an income for people to qualify for affordable housing? Can you talk about that for 15
seconds? Look, we have bands of affordability we need. We're going to track it by people's needs. So it's going to include very low and extremely low income people and ensuring that we have housing for them.
Okay. Ray McGuire, I'm going to go to you on this question. Can you talk about what affordable means to you by income?
So let's be very clear about the numbers. The way that the community looks about it, the way that the builders look at it, there's deeply affordable housing, and then there's workforce housing, and there's above. What has been built up to this point has not been deeply affordable housing. And what are the metrics that you need to look to? Set by the federal government based on Westchester area median income, which today is $103,000 or so. Deeply affordable housing is people making below $50,000. And even that, we need to go more, affordable than that, because we have many of our frontline workers are making $30,000 and they shouldn't be paying 50-60% of their income in rent. So we need to have deeply affordable, and deeply affordable housing, it's $1 billion gets you 5,300 units of deeply affordable housing. $1 billion gets you 7,800 units of workforce housing and above. So as I would think about that, where does the capacity exist? The capacity exists in the capital budget today. The constraint is we have constraints, but we have the resources to build. Those are the numbers.
I'm just going to ask one clarifying question. So it sounds like you're in favor of spending money to actually build housing that targets people who are a little bit higher in income if it stretches farther?
The answer is deeply affordable first. Yes, deeply affordable and workforce housing.
Okay.
Both with the priority being deeply affordable.
Okay. Scott Stringer, I'm going to go to you on that same question.
Look, unfortunately, the de Blasio administration made a deal with REBNY developers to basically put them in the business of building low-income housing. And the problem is that this housing ended up being unaffordable to most of the communities, especially in communities of color, which is why you've seen this spike in homelessness. My plan is totally different. I want to take the estimated 3,000 vacant parcels of land in the city, from vacant open space to whole hosts of different areas. We've identified it. I want to give that land back to the people, to community-based organizations, to build the housing that we actually need. Look, extremely low-income housing is defined as $30,000 for a family of three. But we spend more time building housing for people who make $150,000 a year than we have for this group. And that has to change. And my plan would access city property with a land bank. And at the other end of the spectrum, I would also say it's time to look at as a right development and set aside 25% affordable. It's a bold plan.
Okay.
There's an opportunity with it, but
we're going to stop there. We'll get to more on that. Okay, so now we are next going to go to Diane Morales on the same question. How do you think about what affordable housing is by income? What does that mean to you?
Sure, I'm going to answer that question, but I'm going to start off by, because I'm going to keep saying, I think, you know, housing is a human right and everybody in New York City should be guaranteed housing. So I think there's a couple of things that we need to do. One is that we need to control the things that we can control immediately. We should be looking at all of the recently newly vacated apartments, commercial storefronts, office spaces, and we should be investing in the conversion of those spaces so that we can provide deeply affordable housing to the folks that need it. We also need to fundamentally transform how housing works in New York City. We need to move away from this speculative market that commodifies housing, that provides incentives and subsidies to developers, and really prioritize
10 seconds.
Communities by unregulating, by really focusing on community development, eminent domain, community land trusts, those kinds of things.
So I'm just going to ask a quick follow-up because I hear you on that, but I just want to note, because so much of it is created by private developers as it stands now, that's a hard system to change. So in that framework, you know, what do you see as the correct income level to really spur development in that mode?
Low-income working-class New Yorkers should not have to pay more than 30% of their income on rent, period.
Okay. All right, we're going to next go to Andrew Yang on the same question. How do you define affordable housing by income? What does that look like to you?
You know what's funny is because we're in New York City, we've been conditioned by what affordable means to real estate developers and the rules, where you do have this area median income measurement that the developers tie it to, and the developers want to try and maximize it. Their returns. We have to provide deeply affordable housing. We should be defining it as 40-50% of median income, as opposed to the 70-80% that the developers would prefer. And affordable housing should be affordable in the way that human beings use the word affordable, which is that New Yorkers can actually afford it based upon their income. Right now, when I was visiting a NYCHA facility the other day, they said to me that NYCHA is some of the only truly affordable housing in our city. There are 500,000 people in NYCHA facilities. We need to invest in that and actually make it something that the city can be proud of, as opposed to right now a point of shame in terms of the neglect and decrepitude that a lot of those housing units are in.
Okay, thank you. Next, we'll go to Eric Adams. Same question. How do you define affordable housing? And please, you know, talk about it in terms of income and households who actually will be eligible for this.
Thank you. If we create one standard, and I think Diane stated it, 30%, you should not be paying more than 30% of your income on your rent. Let's start from there. Then we won't hurt the 40% of New Yorkers who are having a sufficiency deficit, and that is low income and middle income. We are decimating and destroying the middle class. And if you just stay with that place of no one should be paying over 30%, then when we win victories of increasing the minimum wage at $15 and more, then we won't be hurting those families who are singles making $30,000 a year, or families of two with children making $60,000 a year. Let's just stay at the 30%. No one pays more than 30% of their income on their rent. Then we have a safe place. As people move up, they can still keep affordable houses.
Okay. Can I ask you what you think of a maximum, like what is the maximum income you think a household should make to be eligible for affordable housing?
Well, I think it depends on the family. If you're a family of four, depending on where you're living. And that's why United Way's report was very important. A family of four living in Park Slope is different from a family of four living in South Jamaica, Queens. And so it's not a clear cut and dry of what's the maximum. It is looking at where that person is. They should not be paying more than 30% of their income because, again, we're decimated in the middle class. That teacher and that accountant, they are being hurt just as much as those who are working in fast food restaurants.
Okay. Sean Donovan, we're going to move on to you. So same question to you. How do you define affordable housing by income?
So Rachel, let me try and answer your question very specifically. Eric is right. The standard is and must be paying less than a third of your income toward rent. And to be very clear, absolutely the greatest need is for the lowest income. Three out of every four New Yorkers that makes less than $15,000 a year is paying more than 50% of their income toward rent. So overwhelmingly, the greatest need is at the lowest incomes. The other thing nobody else has talked about, but we have to recognize, is that when you have that level of income, you cannot afford to even pay the operating expenses of a affordable apartment. So what does that mean? You could subsidize every single dollar of building it, and you still, if you make $15,000 or $20,000, can't afford to pay the rent just to keep the apartment up. So the single most important thing we need here is rental assistance. It's why I've been working with the incoming Biden administration on a proposal for universal voucher assistance. And that's the single most important.
Okay. And I appreciate that answer. We are going to get to how you make this work financially. That's actually coming up next. So we will get to that in the follow-up.
And I apologize, Rachel. I just wanted to thank you and thank all the hosts for having me. Thanks to all my colleagues. I apologize that I have to leave. We will absolutely answer all of the additional questions offline as well as share our plan. Thank you.
And Mr. McGuire, you have to transition out as well, correct?
I have to transition, Rachel. Thank you for having me and great to see all the other panelists.
Okay.
I look forward to responding to the questions. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.
I know. I don't think I was on. I do actually have to leave it at like 12:15.
Okay. So we'll get to a couple more questions, but we'll make sure that happens. Okay. So we're actually going to you next, Catherine. So same question, you know, how do you define affordable housing by income? You've got a minute.
Absolutely. So I'll just be really short and sweet. It's $30,000 for a family of three. Is where I have put the housing plan, what I have committed to build. But I do think there are opportunities to do conversions of office spaces and hotels and to do single room occupancy in many places because we have many single adults who live alone. And that is an opportunity we should be leveraging right now. But in terms of new production, it is very low income. That is where I think tax dollars should be as we move forward. You know, I have lots of thoughts on NYCHA and other parts of the overall housing universe, but just to be clear on that specific question.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate the specificity. And next we'll go to Carlos Menchaco, the same question about incomes and affordable housing.
You know, we're looking at a ULURP right now on Fourth Avenue where we were, as a community, able to get the apartments down to 30% of AMI. I think that's deeply affordable in Sunset Park. I think that the 30% of your income should be a good measure, but someone that's making $1 million a year should not have access to the affordable housing in the city of New York, period. Part of what I think is important here is that what we're talking about is people building wealth. What we're talking about is focusing on our low-income workers. That's what we're trying to do. And in removing any barriers to undocumented immigrants to any of these programs. Part of that is language access, and we got to put money into ensuring that everyone has access, that this is streamlined, and that this is focused on our most vulnerable people in the city of New York, our essential workers.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So we're going to go on to the second part of this question. And I just want to make sure, because we had a couple people going in and out, did anyone not get that question that I just asked? I got all the candidates, right? It looks like it. Okay. Just want to make sure I don't leave anybody out. Okay, so the second part of this question, you'll have a minute for this one as well, is how do you actually see paying for affordable housing and how do you prioritize it? So we've got a budget crunch The city is not doing well financially, despite the federal stimulus that will help a bit. So to what degree do you believe that it's a worthy investment to publicly fund new housing? And to what extent should that be a goal for the city? And we're going to start with Scott Stringer on this question.
It's actually the whole ballgame to the recovery. And we have a number of crises coming at once, which is a rent burden that people are going to have to pay. And we have to create a program to cancel rent, make mortgages whole. That's step one. Step two is we have got to ensure that the next generation of housing we build is actually for the people who need it the most. And three, we do need to invest in home ownership. To your specific question of how to pay for it, here are three buckets. One, it's time to end the 421A tax abatement, the landlord giveaway. Very little of that 421A money goes to building low-income housing, so we have to rethink that subsidy and gear it towards actual low-income housing production. Second, we are going to get about $5.6 billion in federal stimulus money. Some of that can also be used for the housing program I'll put forth. And lastly, we do need to go to Albany and make sure that we ask the wealthiest people in the city to pay more so we can have the greatest low-income affordable housing plan ever devised in a post-pandemic city. And we've got to do it in specific buckets of finance.
Thank you very much. Okay, before we move on to other answers, I have to do a quick tag for the FCC regulations because we are on the radio right now. So just pause for a second. I've got to mention that we are streaming this live on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and streaming on WBAI.org. With that said, let's move on to the next answer on this question, which is going to come from Diane Morales. Same question to you. To what degree do you think that it needs to be a priority to spend money, even in a budget crunch, on the production of affordable housing?
Let me just start off by saying that I think it's absolutely important to invest in order to move forward from this this crisis. I think that we need to, there are things that we can control and we need to start there. We need to seriously consider, I'm going to echo a little bit of what Scott said here. We need to consider seriously moving away from 421A and redirecting the billions of dollars that go into that program into the development of real affordable housing. We need to explore new taxes like the an implementation of a land value tax, a vacancy tax. I know that involves going to Albany, but I'm ready to do that as well as landlords that are warehousing spaces for speculative reasons. And I am wholeheartedly in support of the Invest in Our New York Act, which will tax the rich and bring resources back to the city that are sorely needed.
Thank you very much. Okay, next we'll go to Carlos Menchaca. Same question to you.
We need to spend money, public money, for the public good. Invest in New York is a tax the rich set of bills that now with a supermajority in Albany will help us get there. The capital budget in the city, something I'm familiar with for the last 16 years, managing it and now as a city council member voting on it, we can actually bring $100 billion in the next 4 years to do things like pay for the $32 billion plus dollars of deferred maintenance in NYCHA, actually bring a public bank and fund and finance affordable housing so that when we say in our rezonings, we want 100% affordable, we can get there. That's going to require funding. And that's not what this mayor or mayors in the past have done. That's what I will do as mayor.
Okay, thank you. Next, Catherine Garcia, same question to you. How do you pay for affordable housing if you think that's a priority?
I want to just separate two things. There's the expense budget, and then there's the capital budget. And what you are supposed to do with capital budget money is make sure you are investing for the long term. We need to stop banding and moving people into shelters, which cost a lot and give us very little back. Being able to build permanent homes means that we will have families that can raise their children and that can support their good jobs that we will create. So making fundamental investments in housing is key to our recovery. And it is not the same thing as what the expense budget side of the equation is.
Thank you for that clarification. That is true. It is the capital budget. Okay, so let's move on to Sean Donovan. Same question to you.
Absolutely. And so there are three big areas where we need to invest. First, we were just talking about the city budget. I've made a commitment along the lines of the recommendations of United for Housing to increase our capital commitment from the city by $4 billion every year, and to increase what we spend from the expense side to get to $500 million a year on the city voucher program. We also need substantially more from Washington, D.C. I'm best positioned of any of the candidates to win that help from D.C., given my deep experience. And the two most important areas, we could get tens of billions of dollars for public housing if we access options through Section 8 that are available. And we also need to be unlocking universal Section 8 vouchers. Only one in four New Yorkers is now able to get it, even though all of those folks are eligible. And then the third is, we have many other tools we ought to be using aggressively. I propose creating citywide inclusionary program and other steps as well.
Okay, thank you. All right, and we're going to hear now from Eric Adams on the same question.
Thank you. One, we have our upzoning wrong. We've upzoned in poorer communities and displaced poorer residents for richer communities. I would do just the opposite. I would upzone in affluent areas where you have transit-rich communities, great schools, access to healthy food. So we need to reverse that. Second, it's time to spend our capital dollars. Interest rates are low. This is the time to build, not to cut. The mayor has proposed to cut almost $1 billion. He's down to $500 million now. Then with NYCHA, we can sell the air rights, $8 billion. This has given us a great opportunity to look at the housing we are in control of and make it more livable. And then invest in the new low-income homeownership, such as Nehemiah Houses and the Mitchell-Lama program in the process.
Okay, thank you very much. And Andrew Yang.
And this is an area where we have to invest more, not less, Rachel. And to the point that several other people made, there are essentially four buckets of money. You have the city's operating budget, you have the city's capital budget, you have money from Albany, and you have money from D.C. And the great thing is that we can actually get money from D.C., hopefully at least a smidgen from Albany, but certainly the capital budget. And we have more flexibility to be able to invest in affordable housing. But I'm going to suggest that a lot of the things we're talking about take too long. If you changed and improve developer incentives, it'll take months or years for that housing to come online. We need to convert hotels that are 90% vacant right now, commercial spaces that are 82% vacant right now, relax some of the regulations on what housing units can look like, and get people affordable housing right now instead of waiting for the developers to get their acts together after we improve the incentives.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we will now be hearing from another tenant for another lightning round series of questions. And I'm just going to make a reminder that Candida will be speaking in Spanish, so please turn on your English translation at the bottom of the Zoom screen. It's the globe icon. If you are coming in late, if you didn't hear the announcement at the beginning, make sure that you are getting that interpretation. And Scott, do you have a question?
I got to leave the building now.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you for this wonderful forum. It was just incredible. Thanks. See you all probably in an hour. Bye-bye.
Okay.
See you, Scott.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Now give me one moment, if you would. Now we will hear from Candida Uraga, who is from the Met Council for Housing. Candida, go ahead.
Buenas tardes. Yo soy Candida Uraga. Vivo en Inwood por 30 años. Soy miembro del Consejo Metropolitano de Vivienda. El Consejo Metropolitano de Vivienda es una organización de membresía compuesta por inquilinos de la
ciudad. Made up of membership, made up of tenants in the city of New York that believe that housing is a human right. We were formed about 60 years ago to fight for a city where everyone has access to affordable, decent, and safe homes. We organize tenants to defend not only their individual rights, but also changes in our policies of housing. We do this through support on the hotline to inform of rights for tenants, organizing tenant associations, and advocacy. We have two questions. The first question is a yes or no answer. Do you support the conversion of hotels to supportive and affordable housing that prioritizes homeless New Yorkers?
Thank you, Canada. And we are going to start with Carlos Menchaca on this question, which is specifically about prioritizing housing that is converted hotel. Sorry, I'll just repeat. Conversion of hotels to supportive and affordable housing that prioritizes homeless New Yorkers. Carlos?
Sí, y gracias, Camila, por su pregunta.
Okay, thank you. Next, we'll go to Catherine Garcia.
Yes.
So yes? Okay. Sean Donovan?
And I'm going to have to jump now, but I really appreciate having been here.
Okay.
Hi, Catherine.
Bye, Andrew. Glad you look better.
Thank you.
Okay. Sean Donovan, same question. Do you prioritize that for homeless New Yorkers if we convert hotels?
Yo también, sí.
Okay.
I do too, yes.
I'm sorry, who just said that?
I think that was translation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Eric Adams?
Yes, I mentioned it in my report January 3rd.
Okay. And Andrew Yang?
Sí.
Okay. Diane Morales?
Sí.
Okay. Candida, your next question, please.
La segunda pregunta es...
The second question is yes or no. Do you support rent control for commercial tenants? And would you help pass the Small Business Jobs Survival Act?
Okay, Carlos Menchaca.
Yes. Can you translate that, Rachel? I'm sorry.
Sure, I can. Yep, I'll say it again. So I'll say it in English. Do you support rent control for commercial tenants? And would you help pass the Small Business Jobs Survival Act? And Carlos, that was a yes, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Sean Donovan?
Yes, I support some rent control. I don't believe the act is the right way to do it. So it's a yes and a no.
Okay. Eric Adams?
I'm saying yes and a no.
Okay. So not no to SBJSA, but yes to rent control for commercial tenants.
If we're dealing with just a yes or no answer, I would modify that some. So I have to say no.
Okay. Andrew Yang?
Yes, I know. Like, there are aspects of the bill that are very good, but I wouldn't agree with all of it. But I agree with the fact that we need to do more to help small businesses survive.
I'll ask the first part of it, which is, do you support rent control for commercial tenants?
When you say rent control, it's so broad. Do I support subsidies and limitations on increases? Yes.
Okay. No, it would be specifically about rent regulation laws for commercial tenants. Is that something you would support?
I think there should be regulations for sure.
For rent control?
Well, again, when you say rent control, like to me, you'd want to try and ensure that small businesses can survive, particularly the types of mom and pops that define New York. But I wouldn't want to have hard and fast rules that may work in some part of the city and not others.
Okay. It would be, I understand. I think that's a no, just because it sounds like you wouldn't want a blanket rent regulation similarly to residential rent regulation for commercial tenants. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Diane Morales, I'll read it again. Do you support rent control for commercial tenants, and would you help pass the SBJSA?
My one editorial comment on this is that I think it'd be fascinating to do a study of the yes or no answers by gender. And yes, I do support it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, I've lost track of who we're going with. I think I'm going to go with Sean Donovan. Did you answer this question?
I did.
Maybe we got through the whole list. Hold on. Let me just check.
The list is shrunk, Rachel.
It must have been a memorable answer.
No, it's shrunk. It's shrunk. So now I have to make sure. Hold on. I think we got through everybody. Okay. Candida, could you go on to the
next question?
Yeah.
Exigiría.
Would you require that any housing built on public land be 100% permanently affordable to low and extremely low income New Yorkers?
Okay. Carlos Menchaca?
Yes. Claro que sí.
Again, could you translate?
Sure, I can say the question. So the question is, would you require that any housing built on public land be 100% of permanently affordable to low and extremely low income New Yorkers? So Sean Donovan?
Yes.
Okay. Eric Adams?
It's a two-part question, so I hope I can answer yes or no in two parts. Yes, 100% affordable, and no, I would have moderate included in the low and extremely low.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Andrew Yang?
Same as Eric, yes, but you'd want to include people who had a bit higher income.
Okay. Diane Morales?
Absolutamente.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Candida. Really appreciate you asking those questions.
Muchas gracias.
De nada. Thank you.
All right. We are going to move on to a question on NYCHA. And just let me just clarify, who needs to leave early at this point?
I do. I have to leave at 12:30 to go to the rally for the gentleman that was stabbed in Chinatown.
Okay.
Same, Eric. I'm heading the same place.
Okay. So we will get through some of this question probably, but let's move on to NYCHA. So to contend with the enormous multi-billion dollar budget deficit within public housing, Mayor de Blasio has pursued two controversial options for the future of the authority. One is continuing to push for private development on NYCHA-owned land in order to raise funds for the authority, and awarding contracts to private managers to take over the day-to-day operations of many public housing projects. This is called Rental Assistance Administration, also known as RAD. And for people listening, it's planned right now to convert a third of NYCHA units to RAD by 2028. So I'm going to start with Catherine Garcia on this question. Nope, she's not here. We're going to start with Eric Adams. Great. So do you support the concept of utilizing NYCHA land to raise funds for the authority? You have a minute.
I believe we should use NYCHA air rights. We could potentially get over $8 billion in air rights as we continue to fight the federal government to do its share, but we can't continue to have a plan that only calls for relief coming from the federal government, as they have taken so long. As my mother would say, boy, you better have a plan B. And that plan B is to deal with the immediate crisis in NYCHA. And I also believe we need to step up NYCHA to infuse technologies. There's no reason we can't have a QR code on buildings to see the repairs, take down the scaffolds and use drones to inspect rooftops and really weed out the corruption, the mismanagement, and we could do a better job in running NYCHA. I know it's possible.
Okay, I hear you on air rights, but would you support what is known as infill development, using the land within NYCHA for development?
I'm willing to do that if you allow the tenants who are currently there move into the new units that you built in NYCHA at an affordable price and then take down the old buildings for new tenants. But the tenants who are there should not be displaced, 100% non-displacement.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Okay, we'll move on to Andrew Yang. Same question. Do you support the idea of utilizing the land that NYCHA is on to raise funds for the authority through development?
No, I'm generally against this form of infill development. I don't think it solves the problem, but I think that a lot of the friction we're describing is because too many NYCHA residents don't feel like they have a say in how the land is being used, how their community is being run. So one of the things I proposed is that the NYCHA board, instead of being minority tenants, should be majority tenants. And then there would be a much higher level of trust among
residents that your interests are being looked out for. We all know there are massive problems in NYCHA, like money is getting committed and not spent. And so if then you had majority control of the NYCHA board and then you were to decide that development within a particular facility worked for the community, then I'd be much more open to it. But right now, the sense is that people don't feel like it's in their hands or their choice. And it's the same thing with RAD, where we need to rebuild trust. And the best way to rebuild trust is for tenants to feel like they have control of their own destiny. In theory, the entire, housing authority works for you all. You know, if I'm fortunate enough to be your mayor, I'm going to work for you all. So shouldn't you have the ability to control what's going on in your communities? Okay. And then if you want to develop, then you should be open to it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So thank you both. If you have to jump, you can do so now. We're going to keep going with this question on NYCHA, but if you have to leave, you can do that.
Thank you all so much. Eric, I will see you at the rally. It's against anti-Asian violence. It's been heartbreaking what's happening in our community. So, that's where Eric and I are going. Thank you all so much. It's great to see you. Great work, Rachel. And thank you to the organizations who put this on. You all are fighting for 2/3 of New Yorkers. We love you for it.
Thank you. Okay. So, Diane Morales, I'm going to go to you next. And I asked about, development on land, but I'm also going to fold in the next question, which you all will answer, which is about RAD. So could you answer whether you support development using NYCHA land, and then also how you feel about converting public housing to private management, and if you think that's a necessary step to avoid the further deterioration of NYCHA. So you've got 2 minutes on both of those points.
Sure. So I'm going to start with the second. I am not in support of private developments on NYCHA land. We have seen in the few places where that has happened already, an increase in eviction rates. We saw it in Ocean Bay. We see it happening in Bushwick. It is having a disproportionate adverse effect on the residents. I am, however, in favor of the increased democratization of NYCHA and increased and elevated rights and sort of input of NYCHA residents, particularly insofar as looking at converting things to community land trusts and really maximizing the opportunity of utilizing NYCHA properties and developments in order to further support the residents. That includes the creation, the Green New Deal for NYCHA, the creation of workforce pipelines for NYCHA residents, the ability of NYCHA residents to self-determine how their land is used in terms of community land trusts, urban farming, other sort of projects or developments that would ultimately contribute to the well-being and ability to thrive of the NYCHA residents. I think the bottom line for me is that I think that they should be given the right to self-determination that has been denied to them for so long, rather than moving towards the privatization of this public resource and this very scarce availability in terms of public housing that is really, really affordable to residents. So I would invest in NYCHA to a significant extent out of the city budget. I would advocate at the state level, and I would certainly advocate at the federal level for a reinvestment in NYCHA. For too long, we have moved away from and divested from our public housing, and we know who that's impacting the most. So I would be a champion for NYCHA residents.
Okay. I'm going to follow up on that just because I hear you on all of those plans, but it's really a funding issue. It's more than $40 billion in the hole for NYCHA right now. So how do you pay for what you want to do to fix NYCHA? I mean, where does that money come from?
Right. So as I said, I think there's a part of it that has to come from the city. I think the other day I committed to a minimum of $2 billion from the city budget. I know that's a drop in the bucket, but I have also been a staunch advocate for advocating at the state level for the state to reinvest in NYCHA and actually going back down to the federal government. The divestment in NYCHA aligns perfectly with the increase of Black and Brown families moving into NYCHA, the NYCHA development. That is not an accident. We need to advocate for equity and justice for those communities, and that's what that means. And we need someone who's willing to actually lead on that front and ensure that we get the reinvestment in NYCHA that is long overdue.
Okay. Carlos Menchaca, I'm going to go to you on that. So I'll remind you. So it's, do you support development on the land? And how are you feeling about RAD and private managers taking over at NYCHA? In the framework of the budget, how do you actually pay for the budget hole that NYCHA has right now?
I think that the first thing we have to say is that we need a mayor who has had a lived experience in living in public housing. I was born in public housing, single to a single mother, and really understand the life of a child who is born in public housing. That lived experience is gonna impact what I'm about to say. One, I do not believe that RAD is our answer to the issues that we have with NYCHA. We need to fully fund in the 4 years in my first term the $40 billion deferred maintenance. That's the signal that we're going to send to NYCHA residents right now, that that is something that is serious, that's in the budget, and we're going to work with you. The second thing is all these questions about using the property need to come from the decisions need to come from people who are living in NYCHA. That democratization that we're all talking about can happen, but it won't happen without the funding. And so to your question, this is probably going to be your follow-up, how do we do that? Catherine Garcia mentioned it. These are two budgets. This is a budget that I've been very connected to and understanding that the deferred essentially what we're going to be doing is paying part of that in the expense budget. How do we do that? Defunding the NYPD by $3 billion. There are bloated budgets like the Department of Education. There are places that we can actually inject money. And then that's going to send a signal that the city is serious about public housing and bring the state and with this new Senate majority and the federal government to the table. And then we can talk about rethinking how we finance the rest of it. But the city has to go first. The city has never gone first. And that's what we need to do. And that's the seriousness as someone like me, who's a tenant in the city of New York, who's lived in public housing and is ready to make that commitment if we want to keep public housing public, using public dollars.
Can I just clarify, and I'm sorry if you said this before, but how much money of the city budget are you willing to put towards NYCHA?
Do you have to do it all. We have to do it. The only signal that's going to be real is saying we're going to spend the $40 billion in the next 4 years in connection to the deferred maintenance at NYCHA. That's that there. Otherwise, we're not talking real commitment. That's going to allow us to actually signal to the state and federal government that they can come and support this. Now that money, and we're seeing that right now in Red Hook, it takes time, but it also allows the community to figure out how quickly we can do it. Every neighborhood should be part of that process. Right now there is a federal FEMA project that is causing a lot of issues because they're going really fast. The community.
I'm going to stop it there. Thank you. I'm just going to move on, but I appreciate, the information about Red Hook, but we don't have time for that at the moment. But let's move on to Sean Donovan. And for folks who are listening, I've talked to you, Sean, our newsroom has talked to you about this very issue before. And for folks who don't know, when you were in the Obama administration, you said you were the architect of RAD. You helped make this a policy. So same question to you, can you explain why RAD has to work for NYCHA, why this is something that you put forward, and how do you feel about infill development or using NYCHA land to raise money?
So Rachel, there's an enormous amount of confusion about RAD, and so I want to be very clear what it is and what it isn't. RAD is shifting funding to Section 8 so that you can access far more funding and preserve public housing. It does not require privatization. And in fact, I worked with leaders across the country who had public ownership and management continue, who brought in nonprofit managers and partners to help, but kept public ownership of public housing. And so there's, I think what has happened under the de Blasio administration is they have chosen to use RAD to bring in private owners and managers. That is not required by RAD. And I think there's a great deal of confusion. I want to be very clear about my position. I believe public housing is the single most precious affordable housing resource we have in the city. It must remain permanently affordable and permanently publicly owned. I am open to partnerships with nonprofits and others, But I want to be very clear that that does not include privatization of public housing. So here's what I'm open to. I am open to doing new development on NYCHA land that retains public ownership. I believe there's a huge need for senior housing, for example, for those who need services and other things. And I would do 100% affordable housing like that. Second, there is no pathway to getting the $40 billion we need to fix NYCHA without accessing more federal resources. I would commit $2 billion a year of city capital in addition to being able to access Section 8, not just through RAD, but through other means that actually could get us to the $40 billion within a few terms. And that, I believe, is the way to do this.
Okay, thank you. A follow-up about evictions in NYCHA. And Diane, you brought this up. And it's actually something I've been curious about as a reporter going forward with RAD, because I have seen the reports about evictions going up under, you know, developments that have converted to private management. I'd like to do more reporting on that. I'm not sure exactly if that is right, because we've only had a couple of developments that have actually converted to private management so far. But I would like to ask, Diane, I'll start with you. Using your powers as mayor, and it's some under control and some not, how would you push for tenant protections in these buildings that are being converted to private management? Can we do a minute for that question, Abby?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay.
I mean, so I think the first thing I would do would be to not privatize the buildings. I think, you know, I'm just opposed to it. So that would be the first way to protect the tenants. And in cases that it's, you know, where it's already happening, or it has already happened, I think we need to ensure that we put the full weight of the city behind protecting those tenants, including the right to counsel, and taking on those private managers who are attempting to, you know, circumvent the protections that were supposed to be made available to our tenants, and put the full weight of the city behind protecting them. And I mean, I don't know, you know, what else to say other than that. First is keep the privatization from happening. And then second is put the full weight of the city behind protecting tenants and tenants' rights so that they are not displaced as a result of the privatization and the focus on profit.
Okay. And I'll just remind folks who are listening that right now, lots of these deals are going forward, like right now, and they will be going forward when you take office, if you do take office. Is it right to assume from your answer that you would try to stop those deals that are going on now to privatize under RAD? Okay.
Yes,
I just wanted to
clarify
that.
Absolutely, unequivocally, yes.
Okay. And Carlos Menchaca, same question. How would you deal with evictions in these privately managed NYCHA buildings?
Well, I also want to stand up and say I will not only pause, I will try to stop any RAD conversions if I have power, including standing up right now. We're in a pandemic, and these decisions should not be made in a point where people can't engage and be engaged about these decisions. Second, the courts are actually a great way to support tenants' rights. And Judge Calabresi is a great example in Red Hook in the Justice Center, and really bringing that kind of infrastructure around tenant experiences. The other thing is that some tenants are talking about how we can bring NYCHA in and under after we solve the corruption that's at HPD, a real opportunity for HPD to come and do a lot of the improvements. Many tenants don't know that they are, when they're keeping rent, they're endangering themselves. So they don't have support, legal support. They won't know how to properly engage in a legal battle with NYCHA, and also just moratorium on eviction and NYCHA, period.
Time.
Okay, thank you. And Sean Donovan, same question. How do you see contending with tenants' rights to stay or, you know, not to be evicted when private managers come in under RAD?
So, Rachel, just to be very clear, if someone is eligible to live in public housing, they're eligible to stay with Section 8. And in fact, the program was designed to guarantee that. And so the challenge here is really, and I've spoken to many, many residents about this, what I have heard, and I think what is happening, is these programs are being implemented badly. The same kind of mismanagement that's led to huge problems in NYCHA across the city is the same problem that is leading to confusion, folks falling through the cracks. I've heard over and over again about tenants who are missed for recertifications, have to go hire lawyers to help them through the process. So I believe these processes can be fixed, and 100% of folks eligible, if everybody's eligible for public housing, they're eligible to stay under RAD. And so that has to be guaranteed, and it has to be implemented in a way that that would work. I also believe more broadly that we have to invest in tenant protections. When I was HUD secretary, I demanded billions of dollars of help from the banks in the mortgage crisis that went into housing counseling and legal assistance. We have to expand the right to counsel citywide and fund it.
Okay. And a follow-up on RAD specifically. You say that it's not being implemented well. I've talked to many tenants who would totally agree. but how do you make it work well, specifically with protecting tenants who are going through this? I mean, how do you actually guarantee that they will be protected?
So again, to be specific, if you are eligible to stay in public housing, you are eligible for Section 8, period. And so my understanding of what is happening is that when recertifications are done, when other steps are taken, they're being implemented in a way that they're not communicating well with tenants. Many are language barriers, and it's causing tenants a huge amount of fear and some of them to leave because they believe they may not be eligible, even if they are. And so from my perspective, what I would if we can't get the managers who are coming in to do it effectively, I would take it back at NYCHA, and I would do it as a public process 100% of the way through and ensure that we're actually getting results to make sure that there's 100% right to remain.
Okay, okay. All right, so let's move on to a question about the homelessness crisis. This is a bit of a broad question. We really just want to hear what your plan is to end homelessness in New York City. So I'm just going to go over a couple of stats with people who are listening about the homelessness crisis. There are over 79,000 people who are sleeping in shelters or on the streets on any given night right now in New York City, and thousands more are living doubled and tripled up in apartments. And 90% of single adults and family heads in DSH shelters are Black or Latinx. So this is a really an unequal problem. So first, do you believe that homelessness can be solved and should be solved by providing permanent affordable housing? And what broadly is your plan to end homelessness? And I'm going to start with Diane Morales.
Thanks, Rachel. So yes, I've already, we had there was a homelessness forum a couple weeks ago led by some members of the homeless community. And I have unequivocally stated that I believe that housing is a human right, housing for all. And that I believe that we need to move away from the current framework of shelters, providing shelters. It is a very expensive and ineffective model. We need to guarantee affordable permanent housing for all. One of the first steps that I think we need to take in order to do that is to, where necessary, exercise eminent domain to gain ownership of buildings that are, financially distressed or just abandoned. Transfer those things to community control. That's one of the things I'd want to do. I also think we need to repurpose existing properties, whether that be hotel rooms or hotels or commercial spaces or office buildings. If we had the political and the moral will and commitment to do this, we could actually address that. And that is the direction that I believe that we need to move into, so that we are moving away from this shelter model, which just warehouses homeless and does not allow folks to actually get access to the resources that they need in order to secure permanent housing. And I also think that involves moving away from the current model of market-based for-profit developing that we do in terms of housing in New York City to begin with. So, I I am not a believer in the shelter system. As someone who spent the last decade trying to operate shelters for primarily for families, the model does not work. It does not provide stability for folks. And we should instead be investing those resources and those energies in providing permanent housing for everyone.
Thank you. I'm stepping in for Rachel. Her internet just went down. So okay. Bear with me. Also, I'm not sure where our timekeeper is.
Yeah, I couldn't see that either.
but thank you for...
It's just we'll take over time now, so let's keep the conversation going.
Okay, so I think that was a minute, right, for that answer?
I don't know how long we were timing for this one.
Let's do a minute.
Okay.
Let's do a minute. So the question is, what is your plan to address the homelessness crisis? So I'll go to Carlos Menchaca next.
Thank you. $3 billion is what we spend a year on homelessness. And what we need to do is shift the warehousing of our neighbors and move to a higher rate of FEPs. This is the laws that we're trying to pass in the council right now that would allow for families to stay in their homes with rental assistance. That's something that we can do as the city of New York. We also need to convert our hotel and commercial empty spaces to permanent and supportive housing. And we need to municipalize, using a city program, empty what we think are 15,000 empty apartments. We have the tools in our city to make that happen. We are in a crisis. And what we saw during the pandemic was the incredible powers that the city and state have. And working with the state supermajority, we can actually build a better way to secure housing for our most vulnerable community members, including our undocumented immigrants who often don't have access to many of these programs.
Thank you. Okay, I had my internet went down for just a moment. There's a Spectrum truck outside on my block right now. I'm back on a hotspot. What did I miss? Diane and Carlos, it sounds like you answered the question about homelessness. Okay, so we'll move on to Sean Donovan. Same question. Thank you for their patience.
We're glad you're back, Rachel.
Thank you.
So I want to start by saying homelessness is absolutely a solvable problem. And I've been part of solving it my whole career. I led the strategy for President Obama that reduced street and family homelessness by a quarter. And where we had the resources we truly needed from Congress, we ended veteran homelessness in 80 cities and states, not reduced it, but ended it. And the way that we do that is reimagine our right to shelter in this city as a right to housing. We have a mayor who thinks you can solve homelessness with homeless programs, and you are bound to fail if that's the way you structure the system. So it means you need every single commissioner at the table. That's what I did as HUD secretary. And you need to not only be investing in permanent supportive housing, but also to create a system of coordinated entry where every time someone leaves Rikers, leaves the public health wing of our mental health wing of one of our public hospitals, they are directed directly to the resources they need. Right now, it takes 6 months to place somebody from a shelter into housing. That has to end, and we need to build a coordinated system across the whole city government that can end it.
Thank you. Okay. We had a question earlier about code enforcement and enforcing, you know, repairs, that sort of thing, for tenants that need help with their repairs in their apartments. So we're going to get into that a little bit more with another question on that. When it comes to getting your apartment fixed, tenants are often told to call 311 and get HPD to issue violations, but landlords routinely ignore that, and they don't correct violations. And the city does some, but little, to force landlords to actually make repairs. So what would you do as mayor to get landlords to make repairs quickly and make sure that the emergency repairs happen? And we'll start with Diane.
Thanks. So, you know, I do believe that we need to move towards more proactive, consistent, and routine, you know, regulations that really seek to enforce the safety and you know, security of our tenants in both public and private housing. I've tossed around the idea of creating a sort of grading system for landlords that would impose increasing fines or penalties for folks who fail to do that, which would then be invested in the right to counsel and the support services for tenants in terms of being able to further advocate for their needs and report on the challenges that they're experiencing. So, you know, I think I would fully support and fund the enforcement, increased funding for enforcement of code programs in the city.
Okay, thank you. Carlos, same question to you.
I believe housing is a human right, and that means that we have to fully fund NYCHA. And what I've seen in Red Hook is the incredible destabilization and the ability for someone who puts in a ticket to get immediate responses because the system is centralized somewhere else. Red Hook, as an example, and really all our developments should have teams with the available trades and management systems to be able to respond directly to issues that are not just in code, but quality of life. With the resources and better management, Red Hook can take care of itself, as an example. And that's something that I think is really important. The second thing is that HPD should be able to come in and take care of these issues if they haven't been taken care of with emergency powers. And that's something that I support in kind of redesigning our structure for emergency repairs as well.
Okay. Sean Donovan, same question. What would you do to speed emergency repairs and repairs for tenants?
So my housing plan that's on seanfornyc.com has a comprehensive proposal around creating a much more proactive enforcement system. And it includes more aggressive enforcement. And in fact, what Carlos described, HPD does have those powers now to be able to do repairs and then put it as a lien on a building. I would use that as well more aggressively. But we should also recognize that this requires being more innovative as well and moving upstream. I would create an early warning system that would ensure we're targeting buildings. I would also make sure in the cases where we have tenant-owned cooperatives and many other buildings that are struggling as well, we have proactive enforcement that brings loan programs. I would revamp the J51 and many of the other programs to make sure that we're getting resources. And I would be ready to connect the residents in those buildings to rental assistance much more effectively as well. And so by moving upstream, being more proactive, we can ensure that there are fewer problems, fewer violations in the long run, and better conditions.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to begin wrapping up. And the final thing I'd like you to say to the people who are watching is sort of a closing statement, but framed in this way, which is your pitch to folks. Why should a tenant who is struggling to pay rent right now choose you as their next mayor? And we'll do 30 seconds for this, and we'll start with Diane.
I should be the next mayor because I am a staunch advocate and have spent my entire career actually working with those who are struggling the most to survive in New York City. I believe in housing for all. I think it is a human right, and I will center those folks who, you know, are most insecure and most struggling with housing in everything that I do moving forward, both not just in terms of housing, but in terms of obtaining economic stability in a new economy as well. I'll stop there because I see the time.
Okay, thank you. Carlos, go ahead.
So, New Yorkinos, I am a tenant. I was born in public housing. I understand and have a lived experience that's going to shape the way that I understand policy, the way that we evolve and co-govern together around a budget and legislation that can actually make lives better for New Yorkers across the city. You've seen me fight. I've taken tough votes in the city council. I have the receipts to prove that I will not stand by or wither in front of people. I'm your fighter. Thank you.
Thank you. Sean Donovan.
As a kid growing up in this city in the 1970s and 80s, I saw homelessness exploding on our streets, and it made me angry. I asked myself, how can it be in the wealthiest city in the wealthiest country on earth, we allow New Yorkers to sleep on our streets? That's why I've dedicated my entire career to making better housing for New Yorkers and for all Americans. And I believe that that passion, but also the deep knowledge I have about how to actually translate that passion and that anger into real results for tenants and for all New Yorkers, is what separates me from every other candidate in this race.
Thank you. Okay, we are going to wrap up, but don't leave just yet. I'm speaking to the more than 400 people who are on this Zoom. I want to thank you for taking the time, almost 2 hours of your time on a Saturday, to do this. Thank you to the candidates. Thank you to the candidates who stayed. We very much appreciate it. And for those who registered for this event, you will receive a follow-up evaluation form summarizing what the candidates said here today. So look out for that. And then, and please don't leave yet, because we've got Scott Summer, who is the host of Housing Notebook on WBAI. He's got some important wrap-up information for us before the end. So we will hear from him, and then we will say goodbye. Scott, are you there?
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Rachel. And as you say, I'm Scott Summer. I'm the host and producer of WBAI's and Met Council's Housing Notebook, which airs every Monday night, 8 p.m. at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And I want to thank the candidates for participating, especially those of you who stayed all the way to the end. It's a sign of the resurgent tenant power that you all took the time to be here today. And for that, all tenants should be proud. I also want to thank all of you who watched via Zoom, Facebook, and listened on WBAI. If you or anyone you know missed today's forum, we want to listen to it again, you can watch it on the Tenant Inquilino Facebook page and listen at wbai.org/archive. So folks, primary date is June 22nd. That's much earlier than we're used to. So put it in your calendar. And you have until May 28th to register to vote. And for info on how to register to vote, call 311 or go to vote.nyc. Also, this year is the first time we will be electing our government officials via ranked choice voting. And you're going to be able to rank in preferential order up to 5 candidates for office. So if there's 1, 2, 3, or 4 that you really like, you could put them in a different order, 1 through 5, let's say. And it's a whole new system, and you can learn a lot more about it at vote.nyc. There's some cool videos in different languages, so bone up on that one. That's important. That's a new day here in New York. And of course, most importantly, learn about the candidates. You heard them talk about housing today. There are other forums they'll be speaking at. And also don't forget your city council elections and all the other important races that we have this year. New York City's government's bigger than many state governments. Also want to give kudos to Rachel Holiday Smith from the city, New York City's nonprofit local news source, for a great job she did today, unflappable in the face of technological disaster. So very good. Great job, Rachel. And speaking of the city, there is a dearth of local news coverage in this town. The New York Times killed the metro section and barely finds its way out of Manhattan. The Daily News is sadly a shell of its former self, a paper I delivered as a kid with my brother. And well, the New York Post exists in an alternate racist reality that, you know, is not even worth talking about. That's why sources like the city and WBAI are critical. No one covers our city like the city, and only WBAI has consistently, for over 60 years, given voice to the community and has promoted tenants' rights programs like Housing Notebook. Go to thecity.nyc and wbai.org and donate whatever you can afford to keep these critical voices thriving and robust. And finally, thank you to our panelists and all who organized today's event, Met Council Action, Tenants Pack, Tenants and Neighbors, and especially our tech gurus of the day, Andrea Shapiro, Esteban Garon, and WBAI's Sean Rhodes back in the studio. Tune in for recap and analysis of today's forum Monday night on Housing Notebook at 8 p.m. over at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Once again, I'm Scott Summer, and be well, and thank you for coming today.
Thank you all. Have a good Saturday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so you're tuned to WBAI in New York.
99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. You just heard WBAI's coverage of the New York City Mayoral Candidate Forum on Tenants' Rights. After a little station business, you'll hear a Gary Null special at 1 o'clock. So please, stay tuned.
Gary, old buddy, old pal.
So I want you to be my buddy. You've got a friend.
Friend. Good.
Friends or buddies, as we like to refer to you as here at WBAI. Either way, we invite you to join us and become a member of this fine radio station. We want to partner with you, but we want to do it in the least imposing and most painless way possible. Here's the deal. It's called the Buddy Pledge. You give us your support for 12 months, and we give you access to the most eclectic music, as well as the best and thought-provoking news, talk, and community affairs. Sound good? See it in your heart to pledge a minimum of $10 per month. Each payment will automatically be deducted from your credit or bank statement, so there's no reminders needed. Just join us for a one-year membership and go online at www.give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org and be part of our vibrant community. WBAI New York.
WBAI listeners, you know Elizabeth Moss from The Handmaid's Tale and probably know Upper West Sider Henry Winkler as the Fonz from Happy Days. Well, Saturday on the WBAI Playhouse at 7 p.m., they star in a play about the birth and growth of television in Rena Gross' The Ruby Sunrise. It talks about the invention of television, its possible uses to end wars, but then it turns and becomes a stinging commentary on the misuses of the mass media. That's Ruby Sunrise Saturday at 7 p.m. on listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
On this week's episode of Working Class Heroes Radio, we speak with Southern Solidarity, an organization dedicated to liberation, mutual aid, and the cause of unhoused people, mainly in New Orleans and now right here in New York City. They will speak to us about their efforts, what role they see mutual aid playing in the struggle for liberation, and how people can take up the cause of unhoused folks. We will also break down the rising number of undocumented immigrants who are unhoused and at risk of evictions in the wake of this pandemic. Make sure to tune in on Saturday, February 27th at 6 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM, the radio station for working class New York.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan. On WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Frank him with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay. I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station with Tony Ryan.
99.5 WBAI.
It's autumn. The birds in Ear Massage are migrating to Sundays, 6 to 8 a.m. Ear Massage, sound, spoken word, a bit of opera, and maybe music you never heard before, including the ever-popular Bird of the Week. Ear Massage between Jeff Brady in other news and Your Morning Ursay with James Ursay here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Ear Massage, Ear Massage, Sundays, 6 to 8 a.m.
Korea with Bobby McFerrin on an album entitled Rendezvous in New York. And in this time of COVID here in New York, most New Yorkers are wearing face masks. But then there's the guy on the street corner smoking a cigarette, not wearing a mask. The woman talking on her cell phone who thinks the person on the other end won't hear unless she pulls her mask off. And what about that couple who walk by? A woman's mask is below her mouth and the guy's mask is below his nose. Well, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has now recommended that we wear two face masks because of variant strains of the virus. And for masks to fit snugly, a cotton mask on top of a surgical mask may offer 95% protection from exposure to aerosols and tiny particles that could contain the coronavirus. Well, WBAI has 100% cotton masks for you with our logo and the saying, "Keep Free Speech Radio Alive." We have these for you. You can wear these over other masks for better protection. They are washable and come in white or black. Please call 516-620-3602 to order your cotton face mask for a tax-deductible contribution of $35 or buy two masks for $70. You can also go to our donation site. Go to give2wbai.org to order your WBAI face masks. Again, the phone number is 516-620-3602. You'll be helping to keep Free Speech Radio alive here on WBAI in New York.
Hi, this is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.